and we can take private cell information. One and a half hour, by half past four, we should be done. So, I hope you enjoyed lunch. Let's proceed to our formality first, and then we just proceed like that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, let me indicate that on other issues I've covered, the fact of clemency, the truth that we have them also because management is to through all these departments, especially unions. You would all know that higher education is the lifeline of knowledge which sets the goals. And if we don't take care of a particular department, we're not going to achieve the dream that we have to get to happen. So, in the discussion of our issues, I was a little bit worried on the issue of TVET, where it indicates that there's too much money. And as a group, actually, honorable guest has admitted, yes, when you read this report, you were supposed to be seeing red color that reflects corruption. Because you can't be expecting poor management on issues of money and there are more people. It is not right, it's not allowed. The other thing is with regards to the issue of 200,000 university grants. I want to check with the leadership here if there is a particular target that we or the other team for the other 5 years that will come in after we have the administration. And on the issue of TVET as well, I want to follow my colleagues by saying that we need to really do an oversight. Because what we see and what we have said in this particular paper is not what we know from the committees that we have checked. So the issues of TVET, yeah, they cannot be treated as temporary, sister relationship and sister relationship. So we need to make sure that we treat them equally so that they deserve our attention. On page 8, where it is about financial planning on the issue of cash flow, this part is worrisome. I want to check on it if there are any cases that have been opened. Because for me, you can't be, when you speak 50 million, then you want to say, what else do you ask? So I want to check if there are any cases that have been opened with regards to irregularities. On page 11, where they speak about centers of specialization, the report here indicates the challenges that they have noted yet. CITAS run home centers, contracting and payment to employers. I want to check about what about the NENA, because here it's focused about the employer. So I think that we will need to get clarity regarding the NENA as well. In terms of finance, the budget doesn't relate with our plans here as represented by other departments. And I would want to believe that we cannot expect change if we do one thing time and again and again. So I believe this time around on this administration, we need to do things differently. And I can see that there's a myriad of knowledge here. You can see by gray hairs and so on. Some of us know it's more of knowledge, experience and skills, so then we ask the new one, the good one, to bring this new invention to me to say, my chicken and dog, the chicken is in dog, we are here, let's go together and ensure that we take this country forward. On to the part of skills and training, I want to applaud the department on the issue Yeah, the teachers. You can see that some of the teachers are well young, well with their teaching, but however, with the challenges that nowadays are being hit, we have been in issue with more teachers. The experience that she has experienced, what has been said, like 2 years, he did a job as one of the international contractors with regard to making young people to understand that they are not teachers, not just speakers. So, that particular speaker, I don't know what he said, and even today, young people are still asking when I'm going to like and so on. So, we need to ensure that we know when we give these people contracts, what is it? Because this thing of compliance of beneficiaries making registers, it reduces teachers to issues of statement, not to So we need to make sure that we strengthen that part of it, that we go there, we see these people, we give them questions there if we need to. On the issue of teacher that were indicated on the part of the teacher as well, you indicated that meeting of targets by some teacher, governance challenges, it clearly shows that there's corruption. When you say governance challenges, what is it that you're talking about? Are you talking about your system? Or are you talking about the human system that we have that is not waiting to ensure that you achieve your goals or what? I just encourage you to say, give us some indications to say, when you think governance challenges on this issue of the data, what is it? Or is it interference from the administration, those who are in high authority, or what is just an indication on it? And then, Chairperson, on the one of CET. I want to applaud the department by involving the issue of skills development as part of the program. Because you know, others, it's like that's nice to have people who are to the same but at the end, other people from outside. Because of the institution of skills development, the kids would go somewhere in the country. However, this CET, it needs a serious attention. We are speaking to any language to say actually this CET for us as other people is ECD of those who are a certain age. So please, because if you fail to give this child flesh in terms of resources, in terms of leadership and other things, I mean you can forget about universities and other institutions.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm proud of what we've learned today. And it does not happen often. It's a good thing to lunch. I feel that I'm speaking about food and divinity. Just to get to the point, I want to ask. I see it was spoiled. Oh, the toilet. Capacity is only lacking in a as far as teaching and learning on the support level is concerned, because it appears it also covers a wide range of other administrative issues within the context of the department discharging the responsibilities that are left. What is to be done? What plans are there to augment capacity? One of the things I've learned is that you cannot throw money at a capacity problem, because it will be equivalent to opening a tank of water into a basin that is not closed. You will lose the water. It will run down continuously, perpetually, without stopping, because the capacity of the basin to contain the water for use is rendered useless because it's not proper. So you don't throw money to capacity problems. You develop capacity and then you fund. It must come through from the lens of the department where the capacity is required, how that capacity is intended to be developed and or augmented. Because that needs to come through. Most problems are caused by the absence of leadership. You get the correct leadership, you will get the correct results. Even with a shoestring budget, if you get proper leadership, you will get proper results. I am yet to be convinced that we need to throw money at some of these problems. I'm yet to be convinced. Demonstrate capacity, demonstrate the ability to discharge, and maybe we'll start thinking about giving money to that capacity which is there available, perhaps utilized at the maximum of what is available. Other than that, I don't think that we can answer capacity problems. I don't even want to go into the preceding paragraph, the poor administration of governments by some colleges. And let me just make a point. Let me just make a point on this matter. It cannot be that funds, public funds, are used as flash funds. When people abuse public funds to secure their own fiefdoms and domains, power and knives and various lives at the expense of the output required with those funds. Show us an output, show us that you're meeting targets, show us accountability, and you will be happy. And I think we are at a point where South Africans are tired of stories. Ordinary South Africans, they are tired of stories, headlines. Money which was expected to achieve X, Y, and Z has been lost to A, B, and C. There's no accountability, there are no consequences, everyone goes on their merry way. We need to be able to demonstrate the ability to account and utilize resources for what they are intended for. I do not think, by a long shot, that the TVET program is substandard compared to the university branch. It's not. It shouldn't. It shouldn't be where we throw the Ahmad Matoda score. You know, this one passes, just makes it. Let's take them to TVET. In actual fact, skills development will be critical moving forward, and it helps to assist us as a country to re-industrialize. We have more malls opening than industrial areas. We have now become a consumer nation and not a producer nation. And why? Because we have delegated our duty to create
skillful workers and or people who are able to have the skill to innovate, to industrialize our country. The program of industrialization, the TVET branch, is the backbone of that program. The TVET branch is the backbone of the program to re-industrialize. And we need to make sure that whatever resources are channeled into this, the regional offices must be capacitated. You cannot have the central office carrying the bulk of the burden for the whole country. It will not work. It will create bottlenecks that are necessary to deal with. Moving to my last point, I would like to see, and there's another presentation by the CFO or the CFO, whoever will be available at the point of the presentation today, a breakdown on the money that is disbursed by the departments to the universities, as well as the money generated by the university itself, and or any other grants that may be granted to an institution, versus the amount of money it takes to sustain the institution and the numbers in it. And so we need to see that this is the money allocated by the department. This is the money generated by the institution from fees. This is the money that will be received by the institution from donor funding. Because we want to see something. I personally want to see something there in the utilization of funds versus the sources of the funds and how it is optimized over a period to produce outcomes. I would like to see something. And I would bet you the amount of money from private and or other donors to your previously advantaged institutions of higher learning is probably higher than what you would see at previously disadvantaged institutions or HDIs. And we would want to check whether the involvement of private and or other donors in institutions of higher learning yield or there is a causal relationship between money that comes from private donors and the quality of output at the end of the spectrum. We want to see if there is a causal relationship between institutions which are owned by, which are government institutions but have a higher per capita contribution of private or other donors versus those who only depend on department and grants and fees. And if we are going to pick up in that space that the quality of output is directly related to the amount of money that gets into an institution, maybe we'll have a different conversation. Because we want to see in the presentation of the statement how much of what we pump into these institutions, the university, spending 73 billion, how much of that money accounts for the money on the books of an institution, institution by institution. If we can get that breakdown. And perhaps it will tell us that maybe we need to change how we allocate funds across the institution. Re-evaluate our policy on the distribution of funds. Those are the three issues I wanted to raise, as I said, I was going to be on the future.
Thank you.
I'm almost done, Chair.
You're almost done?
Yeah.
as you prepare, we have to identify we know how bring the
fruit. Now, at Shami Chair, I just want to raise a concern on the community education and training part of it. I believe that this is one of the most important aspects. To me, this of this presentation, it was very important. But when you hear somebody very frustrated because of the financial resources, the shortage, the lack thereof, then one wonders whether what is meant to happen there is actually happening. I still have a question anyway, whether everything has really been done to source funds, to supplement whatever needs to be done there. If that is the case, if the answer is yes, then I believe that the committee itself will have to find ways of intervening. Then Chairperson, the second one, I just, it's a question. When are we going to begin to be able to arrest? When is the department going to begin to be able to arrest this issue of the backlog of certification in the different colleges? Because it's an old story. And it is inconveniencing the students very much, who after spending time there and having written examinations, they find that they cannot be in a position to know how they have failed. Thank you very much. That is what brief is.
Thank you very much. Yes. I hope you have been taking notes. Maybe I must also suppose the issue you have asked of questions. One, what you have just told us about the NS class administration is a confirmation that we need the management of proof extension. That's the answer, yes or no. Chief colleges, I'm also worried about the backlogs on the certification. The lady was talking about the activity. I was talking about the history about the backlog, but how are you intending to address that issue? That is about the one that I'm going to say. The second point is that there seems to be poor performance on the implementation of the infrastructure allocation in the TVET colleges. I think that was a figure of 2.7% that was mentioned. What are the issues then? The capacity to implement by the TVET, what is the intervention as far as it is concerned? Because if the TVET are not able to and then the department will not be able to handle the assist with those funds. I think in total, I saw a figure of 1.7 or 1.8 billion that has been made available for infrastructure. So my worry is that if that money is not spent, it has to be seeded back to Treasury, and that is not good even then. The severe infrastructure backlog in the city of space. Skills. I would like to find out what is the oversight work that the department is implementing to oversee the sector, both in terms of their government and so forth, to make sure that the money that is allocated and spread the process for which it has intended. that landscape, we're going to talk about it sometime, week after next, on the 3rd. But my interaction with the people in the sector, essentially exposed a number of shortcomings, deep seated problems around the city and big, big problems. So I just want to find out if there is an oversight working. If there is not, who also want to come in? Because I think it's a space that the portfolio committee wants to enter and to examine each and every detail in this space. We may not have sufficient time, but I think that's something that we need to do. Because if we're going to attend to the sectors, the rocks that that one has had to be exposed to, it will probably continue to manifest. Universities, education, the implementation of the national plan that you briefed us on yesterday, and you mapped it out in terms of the cost, how long, if you have not, how long is it going to take you to level the implementation? Because those outcomes that you spoke to us about yesterday, very good outcomes, 39 of them. But how long is it going to take us to attain all of those objectives? The plans for the student enrollment for 2020. So one of the chief directors is responsible for that. Now sometimes year after year, especially at the beginning of the academic year, we get to experience lots of problems in universities about admissions, about exclusions, and so forth. Now, how effective is our planning for the next enrollment cycle in universities so that we can experience all these problems? And lastly, you need to Thank you. us who are sitting in this room can formulate a view about this demand, whether they are legitimate demands or they are not legitimate demands. But that is beside the point. The point is, are you able to engage with a student leadership and attend to some of these issues and explain some things you require explanation? Explain how the system is designed and all of that. So that would be why a few questions that I'm also supposed to be very simple questions. I'm sure the simplest of all kind of questions is about the first. So DJ, you tell us whether you want to start or whether you want to ask. But then up to you and the team. So we have got basically 40 minutes, not more than 40 minutes to respond to all the questions.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Thank you to the members. If I said yesterday the game was robust and frank, I think today is robust and fighter and more issues that we need to talk to. So some of the issues I'm going to respond to you, gentlemen, the China is there will be some issues that have to come back to you. The wide-ranging nature of the questions and some of them outside of my specific portfolio, but I will give you the information that I can in addition to this. So let me just start with the United Funding issue. The CFO, acting CFO will pick up on this in more detail. But just to indicate that there is a funding framework that's in place in the university system. And maybe we will need some indications on the funding framework and get some level of understanding and knowledge about it. But it does dictate how we fund universities. And in every year, the Ministerial Statement on University Funding gets released by the Minister, normally around October. In a particular year, which will talk to the funding for universities for the next 2 years, the projections for the outer year. And that will give you a clear sense of what's going to universities in terms of the funding framework for universities. I think another good source of information is the university's own reports, which become available for interrogation, which will then give you a sense of besides what's coming from the departments in terms of funding, what are the other funding streams that the universities are drawn on, including crowdfunding, funding from philanthropies and so on. It is knowledge, common knowledge, that the so-called advantage universities are receiving much more in terms of third stream funding than our more rural universities or HDIs. And one of the reasons is that they can draw very much more on their alumni in terms of contributions to the financial situation, but also in terms of what comes from philanthropies and so on. It's an issue that is tracked every year. There's a report that comes from India Tello that provides some insights into what kind of funding is coming into the different universities. It does rely on self-reporting by the universities. I think this issue of BTEC, a number of members raised the issue. So it arises out of the publication of the higher education qualification sub-framework, which replaced the higher education framework, which was the first framework for qualifications in the university system. Prior to that, there were a whole range of qualifications that could be offered by institutions, not governed by a qualifications framework. Once the qualifications framework came into place, all providers of qualifications had to align with that framework and could only offer qualifications that are on the framework. So for example, it's not just the BTEC. In teacher education, which is my background, qualifications like the NPDE, the National Diploma in Education, qualifications like the Advanced Certificates in Education, were also phased out because they were not qualifications on the higher education qualification sub-framework. But not phased out, but not the purpose of the qualification did not cease to exist. So, for example, not called BTEC, the advanced diploma, is replacing the BTEC in terms of curves. Now, whenever a qualification is phased out, its recognition in terms of law remains in place. So, if you have a BTEC, it will still provide you access to higher level qualifications as it did in the past. If you have a BTEC, it must still be recognized in the employment sector as it was in the past. But that's the case with all legacy qualifications across all sectors. That recognition, they enjoy the same recognition in the system as they enjoyed in the past. And in fact, some even do better because some employers are so used to a particular qualification that they kind of prefer it. In terms of the university types, we have three university types. We have general university, the traditional university that offer general academic programs. We have the universities of technology that offer technical vocational type programs. And we have the comprehensive universities that offer a combination of both types. So they offer technical vocational and they offer general formative programs. And those are three universities, and that's what we work with. The notion of rural and urban is an additional characterization that allows us to understand different contexts. The notion of HCI and advanced universities is also a different kind of categorization that is a reflection on history and how where the institution sit now is a reflection of the historical past and something that we have to take into account. But in terms of the HCIs and the constant cycle of under administration, kind of someone mentioned a vicious cycle, is a key focus for the Department of Higher Education and Training in terms of historical disadvantaged institutions development program. So we have about 5 billion over a 5-year period in order to work specifically with HDIs around building capacity. So that HDIs begin to move out of the cycle of constant remediation and take a position in the higher education landscape as sustainable, viable, effective institutions going forward. But it's not about throwing money at the problem, and I take the point that Mila made about not money that's often the problem, it's capacity. And so that's why we didn't say, let's give an HDI grant to university. Let's rather put in place an HDI development program that's about building capacity for utilization of the funds so that you can make the difference. It's a kind of philosophical distinction between throwing money through a grant to conceptualize a program that builds capacity to use the funds in there.
Thank you.
We've taken your notes on the NISA and the issues that you NISA. I'm asking the colleagues who are presenting as inputs to put a concrete response to those issues. I think I want to adjust the strategies to open the cup. Okay, the fee regulation, fee regulatory framework is work in progress. We are at this point in time undertaking a study across the higher education system to understand what it means to produce graduates in different contexts and graduates in different programs, because that needs to inform the fee regulation framework. I'm not exactly sure what it will look like at the end of the day in terms of unifying the percentage. This will all be work that unfolds. But as the work unfolds, I think we all have an opportunity to inform it. So it's still very much at the beginning stages and work in progress. I think the issue of inclusion of the missing group is not really a fee regulatory framework issue. It's a funding issue. Because when you put the fee regulatory framework in place, it's going to be for all students. The funding issue is how do we fund students properly? From poor students right to students in the missing middle and beyond. And that's the work around developing a funding program for the higher education. And again, for the missing middle, still a work in progress. In yesterday's presentation, I alluded to, or in today's presentation, to looking at the pilots, the ISCAP pilots, to understand the lesson learned from that pilot, and looking to the work that Treasury has done, and the Hare Commission, and the proposal of the Hare Commission, towards working for a model of funding. So again, it's still a work in progress. The language in education, a number of the members raised the issue of languages, and particularly the language as a selective mechanism. So not just one language in higher education because you need to profile over all the languages in South Africa, but actually the fact that language does play a role in social stratification. And that is the case, that competence in language is often used as a proxy for academic competence, which shouldn't be the case. And so the language of education policy will be about addressing that, will be about making bigger possibilities available in the higher education system. But a policy is one thing, practice is another. And I think we're going to have to robustly engage in this issue around language and education, language and higher education, at implementation as we go forward, to make sure that we remove the barrier that language comes in place in terms of not just access but also success going forward. Other than DHET supports private universities, private higher education institutions, they're not allowed to call themselves universities at present, only when you have public universities, public universities. Private higher education institutions are not allowed to call themselves universities at present. There's specific criteria that must be met.
What are they called?
They're called private higher education institutions. So we have 26 universities in the country and we have a big number of private higher education institutions. The DHET does not fund private higher education institutions in any way. What the DHET does do though is play a regulatory role in terms of the private higher education space. Every private higher education institution has to be registered with the DHET before they can offer programs, and there are specific criteria that the institution has to meet in order to offer and operate in the higher education space. The amendments to the Higher Education Act, though, that took place last year, I think, now makes it possible for private higher education institutions to gain university status, provided they meet specific criteria. And that's the regulation that we're talking about. The regulation that has been finalized will identify specifically what the criteria are that need to be met for an institution to be deemed a university and for it to be called a university. So you'll see things like varsity college. So people have played around with the wording because legislation presents having a large university. Sunday, and pick that up later on. Because a BTEC is a follow-on qualification, it builds on an undergraduate degree or diploma you can do the BTEC. There's a policy that we fund in first time undergraduate qualifications through the PhD versus C. The BTEC to a certain extent was a postgraduate qualification, means like all the other postgraduate qualifications. So the funding commitment to present is to fund undergraduate qualifications first time. Because of the limitation in the funding pool. The whole issue of funding postgraduate studies is another big issue that we have to take forward as a country. It's one of the reasons why, if we look at our participation rate of South African students in postgraduate studies, that 5% I spoke about in undergraduates is not the case in postgraduates. Mm-hmm. That's where we have more international students. And it's not because of those international students taking up spaces. It's because of our inability at this point in time to adequately support South African students keen into postgraduate studies. And that's a question and an issue that we must address going forward. Supporting South African students towards honors, masters, PhDs. What do we do about that? So not just about undergraduate funding, it's also about postgraduate funding as a challenge that we need to address. Okay, the BEDS story. So Alvina spoke about university owned BEDS. It's happening at it's BEDS that the university has been able to develop through funding from the state. Right? At present, there are approximately 145,000 university owned BEDS. So that's not the BEDS in the private space, you know, that some universities accredit or university owned BEDS that have been funded, developments that have been funded by the state. And you'll see the notion is to more than double in the next 10 years. To put 200,000 more employees in more than doubling than 145,000, which is an ambitious target that we've set. And we will rely on the state to achieve to pull the funding sources here. So we have substantial funding in terms of infrastructure efficiency grants that will be directed into this. But it's also about soliciting those partnerships and getting additional funds in place. The National Plan for PCF finalization. So the 200,000 beds is a doubling of, more than a doubling of what currently is the new plan. That's new beds. There's about 145,000 existing beds in place. And 200,000. Now if you think about that, 200,000 plus 145,000 gives us about 350,000 beds in the university education against the students, projected students in the almost of 1.2 million. Right? So we're sitting about maybe a quarter of the total enrollment. I think we must also understand the nature of higher education provision is not just contact provision, it's also distance provision, and a big component of our students' enrollment is in federal universities. It's the importance of the two issues at that university.
So the cost of that is not known yet. How much is the cost?
We have norms for what the big costs are. I can't say for PhD knows, but we do have an estimation of what the specific big cost and what the projection for 200,000 would be over the next 10 years. I think your question was more about is the money readily available? It's about
how much will it cost over the 10 years?
So that can be done. Of course, we do have norms in place in terms of what student residences should look like. And if you use those norms to calculate the cost, you can get in those projections.
Maybe we should just go with grants.
I don't know what they do. Because the norm is standard that we have developed for provision of student accommodation. The costing 245,000 minimum, but depending then on other factors, it could be a bit more. The locality or other market factors, but we're making the point that you need it a certain amount. quality, effort. So the verse that we're talking about, husband Christ, on the basis of that, is born out of that that we created, where we're looking at the capacity that institutions have across the country in respect of student accommodation. Where we established that only about 20% of the student population is housed in university-owned accommodation. And at that stage, we were just under 100,000 beds at university. 2017, we had 180,000. So now, we are just above 140,000. Current point, but the situation, the big weapon is back to the colony, because we are having only about 18,000 for the colony student accommodation that we have. So we have to work out that the norms and standards for provision of student accommodation by universities themselves, which is costing us around 45,000. But also we've developed non-standards for private accommodation that the university would need to accredit for student accommodation in the private space. Because that's where we found that some of the conditions quite appalling for students are being subjected to. Hence we developed those non-standards that any accommodation in the private space that will be used by students in a particular institution, it has to be evaluated and accredited by the institution itself. But the question of funding is the one which is a bigger challenge, as we explained yesterday, because out of the funds that the are appropriated through the parliamentary process. 82% of them for university, in as much as we are saying that money is not enough, but still remains that the biggest chunk of our budget is consumed by university. The difference that we say to be playing that critical role across the underground. Committee education to train colleges that we say to play this and that role has got nothing. So I think that's where we are, that's the baseline at the present moment. So as we go forward, we have to actually think as to how we're going to make resources available and develop the capacity and capability of these two sectors that are critical. Beyond policy intent, but concrete, where do we get the money? I think that's the issue. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Gigi. Running to the last meeting, subsidies universities for South African students, and if the students are international students, if they are the government, if they are supported by the government, or if maybe an exhibition that can be discussed. That's not where we are at present in terms of the funding limitations. The National Plan for Peace and Finalization has a temporary plan for provision of the plan, which they needed to be finalized in terms of language and layout, and then a final look and approved by the Southern government. And that's where we are presently. That's been laid out. Dr. Zimmermann is in the process of reviewing it, and we look forward to its imminent publication. I indicated yesterday that implementation on a whole range of aspects of the plan have already started. Calculating funding related to the plan is a work in progress. The DG has indicated the challenges there. And some of those plan objectives, some of those plan outcomes would depend on us funding. So for the DG, the CET outcomes, there are outcomes that we want to see in the system that's funded there, and we have to make our ways for reflecting all those.
I think that's the main thing. So, Chair, we need to close the chapter of the university. On the students that are from the diaspora in the country, when we just emphasize one point, what we have in the city is about 61,500. From the African diaspora. Others from elsewhere, around 14,000. But out of that 51,000 from the African diaspora, 25,000 is from Zimbabwe. So we first started with what a protocol that was signed, which gives similar figures of all students from the subject. Like South African students in terms of the cost structure, program, fees, in general. The only challenge is that in terms of appetite to get into this institution, only one new traffic. South African students do not have appetite to go and study an institution on the continent. That's a reality we will confront with that. We are more the recipient of that arrangement without us being able to send our students. They don't want it. Yeah. So all other things are mainly kept at a record card level rather than practical by the students themselves. I think we need to emphasize that. I don't know how we will overcome it in the future. The question of union coming up quite consistently. Is it correct that there are quite a number of challenges there, and we have been engaging to assist the institution? Members would recall that even at the beginning of the year, there was huge progress in the institution because upon registration, students were registered and that registration had to be handled during the course of time because the program they registered for were found to be not have been registered on the platform database. So we had to assist the institution to work out towards the fulfillment of those requirements. Some of the programs will be accredited by CHP. So we also have to work with the institution to assist to come up, but we're not able to rest social work in that process because the time we realized it was too late and the institution didn't have capacity, internal capacity for the registrability of that particular program because there are about four areas that you require to for a particular program to be accredited. The number fourth prophet as well as fourth that spoke the number of associated prophets for that particular book, the number of kings in Christ who offered that particular book, and the context as well as the relevance of the book. So some of these institutions are actually suffering into meeting those requirements as required by quality assurance voting. These honorable members are quite critical even about the management, you know, in the institution, you know, the current master of the policy. But members will recall that for the appointment of the current management, the vice chancellor in the main, the push came from the student component as well as labor that pushed for the appointment of the current vice chancellor, against professor and so on at that stage. So the current vice chancellor won the race. So I think it's always important that this company also then take responsibility about the decisions that they make in this institution. Not that every time there are programs that in the main are not of the creation of the department or government, but the creation of certain interest groups in this institution. And when they are open, the very same interest group, they don't want to take responsibility of their actions and decisions when open a crop up, way down the line. So that is the situation and perhaps in other institutions as well. No, honorable members are asking as to when and what the concept we put an institution under administration. That act is very clear. It's in respect to collapse of government, poor financial management, or gross irregularity in terms of upholding the principles of higher education act, which then would require that a minister would have one out process of either appointing an assessor and upholding or submitting the report of the assessor based institution under administration or under certain circumstances involved straight for administration like water, for instance, because of the nature of the program and the collapse of government and management system in an institution, particularly financial mismanagement in the main. With respect to universities, these are the issues that have been raised. On the African language, we have undertaken a study, and the study was looking at how to develop African language to become, in their own right, languages of academia. Comments are not organized. That was done. We have translated that into a policy which guides the system as to how they should undertake their policy in respect to language in their own. But the issue is funding, because to develop a language to become a language of academia and common science, it takes a lot of money, and that money we don't have, and the institution don't have either. But we have to see over time what could be done. I can't get into the politics of it. I don't have a near position. Let me just talk to you. But in so far, as in respect to
the
Minister March on Friday, we have been informed, but as a department, we are always available with all stakeholders, including at the beginning of the year, understand more about farming. You need it's not a contact with different institutions. So it's funding more different from other institutions. So it's a matter that we'll have to look what is being presented to us and to evaluate from that point. But we are ready for engaging different trends at any given time. And yeah, that is the information that they will be matching for sharing.
Like a follow-up.
Just a quick question. I do not understand something from one of the responses that I think if you may allow me to share.
Less than 2 minutes.
Yeah, because I feel like the deliberate distortion of the website is coming in the wrong platform, because we are not here to let feelings equal, because the GG is saying it is, you know, the problem of students. That is, you know, when if someone is incompetent and what we told that the students want to
do. Well, if we engage with the government, I think the issue of UNISA, as they said, they have to engage again, because you hold a different view of what you're saying. That the students, the workers who are valued to much study, and therefore...
Sure. Maybe so you do not understand.
No, no, let's engage again, because I want us to deal with certain information. So, before we step off, the question, we're going to answer the question. I think the question was around... It was twofold, the student enrollment from universities from Africa and Sahel. The other part of the question was around academics from Sahel and other African countries who are taking over in universities. So you answered one about the number of students. That one, I'm not sure whether you are looking or it's political,
you correct was also asked the question, the administrator. Yes, the administrator in the
application.
Yeah. Yeah. In the 15, yes, quite a number of lecturers from the diaspora as well as students. So we are engaging the institution in respect to that matter in order to create some balance where we have the view that an institution has gone way, you know, off mark. I wouldn't have statistics now the institution as such, but we're sensitized the system about the sensitivity of the matter and how to.
There was one, so he doesn't want to confront it, understand.
Okay. It was a bit long this morning, so I'm going to try and be as crisp as possible.
Yeah, quickly, quickly.
First question from Wohan Kostkarzi. It is two different purposes. The one is going to be more technical campus, and the one more business focused. In terms of infrastructure, the question was how would it be spent and in what proportions it was allocated to colleges. Remember the announcement of the increased infrastructure came in December 2017. So back 2018, we had to move quite quickly to put our plan in place. So for year one, what we did was to allocate proportionately, or just to allocate equal amounts to all colleges. So I think there was 0.3 billion and about 27 million per college. Forgive my math now, but because something in that order. for the first year, but what we did ask for is maintenance plans. We understand that maybe some of our rural campuses have greater infrastructure needs than some of the more urban colleges. So what we want to do through the maintenance plan is to understand what the needs are per college, and perhaps for year two and year three, those amounts will not be equally distributed, but we are trying to allocate per what in the need. So that was my last question. In terms of the procurement processes, so the department is really not involved in the procurement processes. The department wants to see the maintenance plans to make sure that the right things are being prioritized, you know, so that it goes to a workshop or it goes to a classroom and not to an admin building. That was the first thing we wanted to see. And the second thing that we were checking in the maintenance plans was to see the cost estimates. So when we saw, for example, a quotation for brickwork or fencing or whatever was excessive, we would have sent it back to the college to say, according to our team, those costs seem excessive, please relook your quotation. And, you know, so it was for us to try and make sure that that value for money is achieved and that the quotations were not exorbitant, loaded in any particular way. Then once that was approved, it goes to the college and the college follows its procurement processes. Now, I spoke also about the 29 policies, that is the financial policies. Amongst those is procurement policy. So, I mean, it is very clear, it follows really what the National Treasury prescripts are in terms of, you know, below a certain amount of street quotes, above the tender, and all the conditions that are in that. Specification committees, adjudication committees, all of that. So that's a quality project, it's not a department.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are you having some more questions?
There were so many. Okay.
Yeah, because you see what I propose that you should do for your board. Some of the issues that I was calling you in the discussion, let's convert them into areas of briefing. So that we then come and brief us on those areas. For instance, on the infrastructure. Already we have got a game plan for infrastructure. And then I don't know what else was arranged around corruption and whatever. Governance issues of the achievement. You are also coming. So some of those questions can be attended to there. But I was going to propose to members that probably make proposals on the areas that you need to brief on thoroughly from the department, and then you put it on the program. When the department comes, those questions that you raise, then they respond to those questions. Alternatively, those that they could not respond to today, they can just do it in writing with the executive members. Because I would like us to take the assignment. So that you don't have to reschedule them, you don't have time to pay. Remember, the purpose of this briefing is orientation for us to understand the various components of the department and how they are working. Whether they are doing that effectively or not effectively, we can continue to engage with all of that. So if members are having a problem, I would like you to respond to questions, respond that you like to, but if one of the members suggests topics that they want, the department to the first one. And then fine. In the interest of time, because we can take this scientific innovation, I do not expect that you are going to be long. I know that it has indicated that the police. So should we give you the teaching 15 minutes for the present, and then we engage for the next 10 to 45 minutes?
So, DG West, can you quickly let me get this question? This was a question, maybe the name.